Welcome to the Flu Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:13, that's Pacific Summer Time. Today is Tuesday, and that is September 13th. And this was another weekday in markets generally. But I think we do have to back up a few days because that was a very clear downward dynamic on Friday. And in the Friday audio, I really had the sense that it was an all-change moment. Then we had quite a firm day yesterday, and that was a fairly substantial bounce, but it didn't quite unwind the downward dynamic that we saw on Friday. And then what have we had since? Today's move on the downside has pretty much countermanded yesterday's move on the upside, suggesting that the real signal was what we saw on Friday. So we are now in at least a corrective phase. Now, whether this is a near-term or medium-term corrective phase has yet to be determined, but the S&P is trading at 21.27. It's down almost 1.5% today. The Dow a little bit less, and the Nasdaq down about 1.09%. Then, when we look at where we are, there was a short-term overbought condition, and we had been in an incredibly inert environment all the way through August. And, you know, I mean, that was almost reminiscent of the kind of environment that we used to see back in the early 2000s, where, you know, the entire world went on holiday in August. And, you know, I remember when David used to go on his long cycling holidays and I'd be scratching around for something to write about because there was so little going on. But, of course, that all changed with the credit crisis and quantitative easing. Then we have gone to 24-hour, 365-day markets. And, of course, that has also been driven by the evolution of algorithmic trading systems. Well, then last August was something quite different because the volatility was so low that it was a very easy prediction to say that it was not going to last. It most definitely has not lasted, but it has come back with volatility has come back with such a bang that it has probably taken many people by surprise. So we are seeing that markets are pulling back, and it is some of the, and I think this is perhaps something that gives us an idea of what it is that is driving this decline. It's the fixed income proxies in the stock market that are leading on the downside. Those are the types of companies that either have the respectable yields or long histories of increasing their dividend payouts are leading on the downside, and they are responding to the surge in yields that we have seen. U.S. Treasuries, the long bond today was down by 1.5 points, and the 10-year was reasonably steady in here, but what we continue to see is that this is at least a reversion back up towards the mean in terms of the yield. And when we get to the mean, then that's going to ask big questions. But when we look at the short end of the curve, then LIBOR, and I've posted the 3-month LIBOR chart in here today. Well, it looks like a completed base. It looks like it's on a recovery trajectory. And I think anyone with even the most basic knowledge of chart reading would reach that conclusion. And that does represent a significant challenge for the fixed income sector for the very simple reason that there is so much debt is tied to the LIBOR rate. So that is going to really weigh heavily on high yield because there will have been a substantial number of borrowers were issuing debt on a floating rate for relatively lengthy maturities, and now they are going to have to start paying out at a time when corporate profits have been falling for consecutive quarters. So not an ideal scenario. Of course, the flip side for that is that floating rate notes represent perhaps the most accessible hedge to rising interest rates of any fixed income instrument. So then looking at the prospectus, whether there is a call option whether those bonds can be renegotiated or called in, and then exactly who is the issuer and how well able is that issuer to pay out the higher coupons. is going to really tell the difference between a sound investment and one that could really turn very nasty indeed. When we do look at the bond markets, though, there is some very clear evidence that we are in a bubble. And it's something that I wrote about in Crowd Money. It's something I talk about at the chart seminar. And it's something that has been evident in the study of crowd psychology, not just recently, but for hundreds of years. And it is that contradiction is a defining characteristic of a mania. And it is very simple that when you have a mania in financial markets, then that crowd becomes tolerant of contradiction. So, you know, in the Nasdaq bubble, it was, you know, earnings don't matter. And of course, earnings do matter. And, you know, right now, it is there is an enormous contradiction in the bond markets. And it is very simple that you can have negative yields and still make money as an investor. And that is ridiculous, that you can actually have to pay somebody to take your money is not just in the sovereign bond markets anymore, but it's in the corporate bond markets as well. So that being the case, we know we really are in silly territory. And we will look back on this episode probably 7 or 8 years from now and think, my golly, how could we have been so stupid? How could people have been so divorced from reality that they actually did this? But it is considered normal today. It is considered by investors they have no other choice because they have so few avenues in which to invest in the bond markets. So, and of course, like any momentum move, that will work for as long as the crowd is willing to support it. But eventually, supply overwhelms demand, and then prices start coming down, and they come down quickly. That does hold out the prospect that when bond yields conclusively bottom, and they have certainly hit a near-term, potentially medium-term low already, but when they do break that progression of lower rally highs, that those bond yields could start moving higher in a dynamic fashion. And that could potentially take a lot of people by surprise, and it would have a widespread impact. And most particularly could have an impact on the stock markets, and not least because the bond markets are orders of magnitude larger than the stock markets. So there would be a knock-on effect. Now, when we look at where we are in terms of these trends, we've been trending higher for 7 years already. And the S&P 500 had broken out to an all-time high earlier this year and has sustained the majority of that advance. We came back to the region of the upper side of the underlying range yesterday and bounced, and now we've pulled back. So there is the potential that the first area of potential support is going to get knocked out. The next area of potential support is the region of the 200-day moving average. We're really not that far away from that either. That is the next area where support could potentially be found. Prices today are closing at 21.27, and the exponential moving average is at 20.91. So we're really only talking about we're less than 40 points away. And on a 2,100-point index, that's really not very much at all. The next big area of potential support is the psychological 2,000 level. And now, if the market pulls back from 2,200 to 2,000, that would be a 10% pullback, or pretty close to it. And then people would start to really question whether that's a potential buying opportunity or whether it would be an indication that we're moving into a much larger corrective phase. Well, then there would be big questions asked. But what it would constitute is a failed upside break. And we're not there yet. The market could potentially find support in the next 40 to 50 points and rally. But what we do have is that there are short-term overbought conditions in some of the largest shares in the index. And it is no coincidence that some of the largest shares in the index have also been among its very best performers. Google and Amazon, Facebook are still really quite overextended relative to their trend means. Then there is the potential for some additional consolidation. The problem is that we have been through such an inert environment where stock markets were unable to rally, and therefore we are now in a more difficult environment, and we could be in a corrective phase similar to what we saw in June, or similar to what we saw, potentially similar to what we saw last year, either in October or potentially even in January. And I think it is worth considering what was the strategy that worked best when we've had flash crashes. Because I think it is worth considering that we have been through a very volatile period. And that means that algorithmic trading systems, how exactly is it that they size their positions? They size their positions based on volatility. And the other factor that influences that is the cost of margin. Well, the cost of margin has been negligible because interest rates have been so low, but the cost of margin will rise with interest rates. That will necessitate that positions are smaller. And if volatility is moving higher, it means that positions have to be tailed back. That does raise the potential that there is going to be a highly leveraged algorithmic trading system that gets into some trouble as a result of this spike in volatility. And if that is indeed the case, then we should probably open up the playbook and start to think about what is the best strategy just on the off chance. And I'm not predicting it, but we have to be aware of the potential that we do get a flash crash event where prices could fall back to 1800 for the space of about 5 minutes and straight back up to over 2000. Now, that's certainly a potential area, potential threat. And then what we have is the way to benefit from that would be to have orders way below the market, and maybe one is lucky and they get triggered. It also means that we are still at close to highs, and if people are interested in taking profits, then it is probably better to take some than to introduce a stop, because if volatility is increasing, then the chances are that stops will be triggered. And then we might get a bounce backward, back up again. When we look around and think about it, the Fed is going to be incredibly cautious. They know that they are going to have an effect on asset prices. And they know that the stock market and the property markets are hot. So if they are aggressive, then they are going to cause trouble. And that is the last thing they want to do. So I suspect what we're in for is a more volatile environment overall, but perhaps not a big decline. This is still and I think we did have a breakout. If the breakout fails, let's say the breakout fails and we get the prices coming back to 2000, well, if the dynamic of the failure is greater than the dynamic of the breakout, and right now that is potentially possible, then we could see prices coming back to 1800, because just a rule of thumb that if it can't break out, then it goes back down and tests the lower side of the underlying range, and the lower side of the underlying range is closer to 1800. So this is a more risky environment overall, and then if that is the case for Wall Street, it is the case for just about everything else as well. And when we look at Europe, obviously those markets are not as overextended on the upside as Wall Street is. But at the same time, that does not mean that they're going to be immune from selling pressure. And when you, for example, look at the Euro Stoxx 50, that it rebounded impressively from its January low. It got right up to test the region of the moving average, and it's looking increasingly likely that it is failing at that level. It really does need to sustain the move above 3,000, and it pulled back below it today. When we take a wider look at global markets, then we also have to consider that commodities are coming under pressure. And the dollar has not rallied in a dynamic fashion against the yen, for example, or the euro. The pound today was really quite weak, and it has, most definitely encountered resistance around 135. So I think we have increasing evidence that the Bank of England does not want to see the currency stronger than 135. But generally speaking, it was a reasonable day for the dollar against the commodity currencies. And the precious metals were weak in here today. And platinum in particular is right now in the region of its 200-day moving average. I think it's within $2 of it. This is a potential area of support. It has fully unwound its overbought condition. It is a bit oversold in the short term. So there is the potential here that we get a bounce from this area. And it's a reasonably similar story for silver, although it does have a ways to go yet just to get down to that moving average. And there is nothing sacrosanct about the region of the moving average. We often get overshoots, and often prices don't quite get to it. So it is really just a trend mean, and we can see prices finding support in the region of the moving average. Having bought last week, I am feeling a bit sheepish, but at the same time, I'm not really willing to burn for the faith, so I'm not going to hold on indefinitely, but I am going to hold on a while longer in the hope that they do bounce from this area. And generally speaking, it was a weak day with oil prices, and it has been our view for at least the last couple of months that this is a right-hand extension phase following the type 2 bottom off the accelerated low. So we've had the massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend. We're in this period of right-hand extension, which is going to be volatile ranging, and right now we are pulling back from the upper side of that range. The fact that oil prices have rallied would have fed into, and this is, gives us maybe another indication of just how wrong-footed the Fed might be, that they might have taken the bounce in oil prices as feeding through into their inflationary pressures, but that is likely to wash out of those statistics the longer that oil prices range for. And I think that the Fed has got a lot of work to do, and purely moving on the monetary front is not going to achieve their goals. That if they really do want to raise interest rates, they're going to have to get spending from something else to continue to support these markets, and that means fiscal spending. But we're going to need a new president for that. We're going to need, and it is going to have to pass through various houses of Congress. So that could be months, if not a year away, before we get a fiscal stimulus package put together. So the Fed would be well advised to do very little between now and then. But they don't listen to me, and they don't listen to anybody else either. And but they may listen to the market. So we're likely to be in a corrective phase overall until we get whatever it is they're going to do on the 20th, and that might potentially be a catalyst for a bounce. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.